Hello, my friends. This is Dr. Beter in Washington. Today is September 30, 1979, and this is my AUDIO LETTER No. 50. 40 years ago this month, World War II began. On September 1, 1939, the German war machine of Adolf Hitler began the Blitzkrieg against Poland. Soon, all Europe was aflame with war. The flames soon spread to engulf the United States, Japan, and much of Asia. In the nearly 6 years that it lasted, World War II took an estimated 35 million lives. About half of those killed were civilians, men, women, and children. But whether they were in uniform or not, very few of those who suffered and died had any real idea why. The forces that led to World War II were set in motion in secrecy. Then the war itself intensified the secrecy on all sides. Secrecy in diplomacy, secrecy in planning military campaigns, secrecy in developing new weapons. And, my friends, it was a secret weapon that finally ended the war in the Pacific. On August 6, 1945, the first atomic bomb was dropped in war. It was dropped by a nation which thought of itself as a Christian nation, the United States of America. And the city which was chosen to be the first victim had one of the largest Christian communities in Japan, Hiroshima. One might have asked, why are the Christians of America killing the Christians of Hiroshima with the world's first nuclear attack? But of all the questions which have been asked about Hiroshima during the past 34 years, that question has been asked the least, if at all. Everyone knows this was war. Hiroshima was considered a major military target, and so, Christians or no Christians, Hiroshima was attacked. Today I'm often asked, if Russia's new rulers of today really are Christians, why are they willing to kill people? And why are they willing to do things which may cause even Christians to be killed? The answer today is the same as it was in World War II. This is war. But today, after 4 decades of increasing secrecy, war itself is secret. Not only do we not know the reasons for war, we do not even know certain kinds of warfare are taking place. The most important military and political developments today are parts of a secret war in which the United States is now the prime battleground. The battle is between the new Christian rulers of Russia and their bitter enemies. These enemies are the overthrown Bolsheviks and their close relatives, the Zionists. The Kremlin of today is trying above all to prevent their enemies from igniting nuclear war. Last spring, as I revealed in AUDIO LETTERS 45 and 46, the Russians began seizing control of the United States government. Key officials from President Jimmy Carter on down have been replaced by doubles. And these doubles are not human beings in spite of their appearance and behavior. They are artificial, robot-like living beings called organic robotoids. When I first revealed these things, I braced myself. I knew that many of my listeners would be unable to absorb them. But my reason for doing it was the one I stated then. Without knowing about the robotoids, events would become impossible to understand. Since that time, robotoids in key positions of power have been causing many surprises in the news these days. The strangest surprises of all have been caused by the Jimmy Carter robotoids. In AUDIO LETTER 48 2 months ago, I detailed the major instability problems the Russians are having with their Carter robotoids. The holographic computer brains of the robotoids include instabilities which were present in the real Carter brain in a way that exaggerates those instabilities. As a result, ever so often a Carter robotoid does something so unpredictable that it is dangerous to the Russians. An example was the famous so-called killer rabbit incident of a few weeks ago. A Carter robotoid told the press, in all seriousness, that he and his family had been attacked by a swamp rabbit while fishing. Can you imagine? The Russians want to rid themselves of the nerve-wracking problem of the unstable Carter robotoids. Earlier this month, on September 15, an attempt was made to do just that. The alleged President Carter was entered in a foot race, of all things, in the Catoctin Mountains near Camp David. It was a strenuous 6-mile course, which included much uphill running. Carter Robotoid No. 14 was programmed to run at maximum speed and not to let up for any reason. The Russian strategy was simple. Runners who overexert themselves and who do not stop and rest when danger signs appear can do themselves serious harm. Sudden overheating, dehydration, and heart failure can take place abruptly in extreme cases. Robotoids, as I have explained in past tapes, embody a crude facsimile of human metabolism. Their hearts are relatively weak, and they live for only a few weeks or months depending on the stress problems. They have no self-preservation instinct, so Carter Robotoid 14 was programmed to run like the wind. It was expected that suddenly, without warning, he would suffer complete heart failure, collapse, and die on the spot. If the Robotoid died before aid could reach him, everyone would just accept it as a tragic accident, and the Russians would be rid of the problem of unstable Carter Robotoids. But the day of the race dawned cooler than it had been expected by the planners. Carter Robotoid 14 did collapse, but did not expire instantly. His face turned a deathly greenish-gray, and he was moaning and incoherent. And yet, when the Secret Service men picked him up, his legs kept running as programmed. Finally, an ambulance arrived, but Carter Robotoid 14 did not use it. Instead, the Robotoid was bundled off in a car to Camp David, and there Robotoid 14 finally died, too late and out of public view. The purpose of the race had been to eliminate the Carter Robotoid problem in a way that would leave no questions, that is, sudden death on the spot. But there would have been a storm of questions if Carter's alleged death had been announced after help arrived and took him away. So after the race, Carter Robotoid No. 15 showed up to reassure everyone. He looked nothing at all like the deathly figure who had collapsed just a short while earlier in the race. He looked like a new man, and in a sense, he was. The contrast between the dying Robotoid 14 and the fresh Robotoid 15 is something you can see for yourself. Just get a copy of Sports Illustrated magazine for September 24, 1979. On pages 16 and 17, you will see the pictures of Robotoid 14, stricken, stumbling, mouth agape. Then look at the fresh, smiling picture of Robotoid 15, handing out trophies on page 19. Only a short while later, and then ask yourself, is this the same man? My friends, the Robotoids are one example of what you need to know to understand the secret war now going on. But there are other things you need to know too, because the war between Russia and her Bolshevik and Zionist enemies has many facets, and it is very ancient. My three topics for today are Topic No. 1. Runaway inflation and the collapsing American economy. Topic No. 2, the Cuban crisis to destroy SALT II. And Topic No. 3, the thousand-year war between Russia and the Khazars. Topic No. 1. To most Americans, the most worrisome headlines these days are probably those about our weakening economy. By comparison, most other major news events may seem remote and less important to us. SALT II, troops in Cuba, and arguments between blacks and Jews may disturb us, but they hardly seem to touch most of us personally. The economy is another matter. We all have to keep food on the table, clothing on our backs, and a roof over our heads, and it's becoming harder by the day to do these things. Hardly a day seems to pass without some new item of bad news about the economy. One day the Federal Reserve System announces that it's raising its own interest rates to member banks to an all-time record level. Another day, leading banks raise their interest rates to their best customers to levels which also set new records. With each increase, young couples wanting to buy their own homes find it more and more impossible to do so. For them, The American dream of a home of their own is fading into a fantasy. They are watching helpless as their fondest hopes explode in the tornado of rising consumer prices and runaway interest rates. But somehow, my friends, it turns out to be only the average working man and woman who are being priced out of borrowing the money they need. By contrast, business loans are increasing fast instead of dropping off. Many businessmen are borrowing all they can get, regardless of interest rates. They are pouring their dollars into plant and equipment, building up inventories, and in some cases speculating in foreign currencies and gold. And so while you and I are being squeezed out, big business is borrowing dollars like they are going out of style. Because, my friends, the dollar is going out of style. They are expecting to repay their loans later on with dollars that are almost worthless. Meanwhile, the bad economic news goes on. One day we're told that unemployment is up. Not good, we think, especially if we happen to be among the unemployed. But at least this ought to start bringing down inflation, according to most all the experts. For years they have always told us that. But no, inflation keeps speeding up too. We know it is every time we buy groceries. Next we hear that productivity is dropping off in the United States. According to government figures released last month, productivity was plunging at the fastest rate in 5 years by last spring. That means America's economy is becoming less and less efficient and more service-oriented. If that is so, we wonder, how can we compete in world markets? Then someone mentions that what is happening to the United States economy is called stagflation. Our economy is stagnating, and yet inflation is heating up. Again we scratch our heads. This is something new to us in America. In the past we have had recessions, and we have had inflation, but not together. Now we have both at once, and where is it all leading? One clue to where it is leading is contained in other figures released by the Labor Department last month. Last spring, hourly compensation measured in dollars was rising. People were receiving increases in pay at a rate of about 8% a year in dollars, but inflation is now outrunning these pay increases. As a result, real compensation in terms of what you can buy with your money dropped 5% during the spring quarter. So our paychecks may look bigger and bigger, but on the average they're able to buy less and less. The sliding value of the dollar at the grocery store is reflected also on the international monetary scene. Overseas, holders of dollars are unloading them as fast as they can before they can shrink to nothing. Dollars are being traded for hard currencies, like the West German Deutsche Mark. The shift is massive. A few days ago on September 20, there was an effective devaluation of the dollar against the mark by about 2%. Dollars are also being traded so fast for gold that the trading has been called frenzied. That is why the price of gold in United States dollar is soaring to incredible levels. Just 2 days ago it passed $400 an ounce for the first time in history. My friends, our growing economic woes are the fruits of deliberate planning by very powerful men. I made much of this plan public nearly 7 years ago in my book, The Conspiracy Against the Dollar, published by George Braziller in New York, New York. Now that the things I have described there are happening, my book is out of print. But at that time most of my readers simply could not believe that these things could really happen. And so even though I identified many of the people responsible, nothing at all was done to stop the plan. A year later, in the spring of 1974, I revealed in congressional testimony that most of America's Let's Gold hoard was gone. It was a key ingredient in the plan to destroy the United States economy on the way to dictatorship. I stood ready to back up my charges with evidence and witnesses, but Congress did nothing. So I went public with my charges. Public pressure finally led to the so-called gold inspection visit to Fort Knox by congressmen and newsmen in September 1974. It was a fraud and touched off many questions and suspicions in the foreign press. But here at home the fraud worked, and people calmed down about Fort Knox. nothing lasting was done, and the plan for America's economic collapse continued. The fall of 1974, I began recording talking tapes. My very first tape, audiobook number 1, was recorded 5 years ago next month. That tape included information which my listeners could use as a starting point in their own personal planning for the events to come. I did not give financial advice as such, but I did describe the kind of things which historically have been useful under adverse economic conditions. Today, many of those conditions are developing all around us. Early in 1975, I recorded a second tape, audio book number 2, about the Fort Knox gold scandal. In that tape I gave more details about the secret disappearance of America's former gold hoard. I also gave more details about the economic and political upheavals which were being planned for America's future. In those tapes, I gave the best information then available to me. But I made the mistake of revealing an approximate timetable for coming events as they were then being planned. I stated clearly that these were purely the plans and schedules of men. My hope in revealing those plans was that by doing so I could contribute in some small way to delaying or even stopping them. My intentions in making public the secret timetables, which were plans, not prophecies, were sadly misunderstood by some. I have actually been condemned by some people because World War III did not take place on schedule. Can you imagine? Even so, the confidential sources who gave me that information which I revealed 4 and 5 years ago knew what they were talking about. For example, in those early tapes I revealed the plans of the late David Rockefeller and his intimates for gold to reach $2,000 an ounce. At that time, it sounded ridiculous to many people. Even $200 an ounce sounded like too high a price for gold to reach more than temporarily. But today, gold has already established a new record of at least $400 an ounce. The old conventional wisdom is in the wastebasket. The so-called gold bugs of only a few years ago have turned out to be too conservative. Whether gold will still reach $2,000 an ounce as originally planned remains to be seen. After all, the real David Rockefeller has been dead now for 7 months, since February 1979. Even so, the basic economic forces which he and his collaborators unleashed now have tremendous momentum. The total collapse of the United States dollar, and with it our economy, is now only a matter of time. There is an historical precedent for what is happening to us, my friends. It happened in Germany in the early 1920s. It was a case of superinflation, leading to disintegration of the economy. The seeds of disaster were planted in July 1914 at the outbreak of World War I. The German government did not want to provoke opposition to the war by imposing heavy taxes, so instead the redeemability of the mark in gold was suspended. Then the government began borrowing to finance the war without any limit on the amount of money that could be printed. In the same way, the process of divorcing the dollar from its gold backing began during World War II. In 1945, the gold backing was reduced from 42% to 25%. Then in March 1968, Congress quietly removed the last remaining gold backing of 25%. That meant the printing presses were free to roll. Finally, on August 15, 1971, President Nixon finished the job of untying the dollar from gold. He slammed the international gold window, saying that the United States would no longer redeem dollars with gold in international dealings. What he did not say was that most all of America's alleged gold hoard was gone by then. The German government's action in cutting the mark loose from gold in 1914 triggered the accumulation of currency during the war. After the war ended, people began spending their stored-up marks, and inflation took off, and in the same way, after Nixon closed the gold window in the United States, the prices for international commodities began to zoom upward, and gold followed suit. As the German inflation accelerated, the German Central Bank tried to support the mark in the international exchange markets. Every time the mark would start sliding relative to other currencies, the Reichsbank would buy marks using their own reserves of foreign currencies. It's the same today, my friends. Whenever the dollar starts tumbling, we hear that the Federal Reserve, our privately owned central bank, is supporting the dollar. Sometimes the key word used is that the Federal Reserve Bank is intervening on behalf of the dollar. Either way, it means the Fed is throwing away hard foreign currencies to buy up sick dollars on foreign markets. In other words, throwing good money after bad. The Reichsbank also tried to support the mark by giving gold for marks, not at home but in the international money markets. The parallel to this today is the series of gold auctions by the United States Treasury. The Treasury keeps these auctions as small as possible because there is no huge gold hoard left to back up the dollar. Instead, there is a secret scramble going on continuously to scrape together gold from various sources to auction off. The gold is sold, in the words of the GSA invitations to bid, as is, quote unquote. There are no guarantees, and the gold offered is highly impure instead of what is called good delivery gold. Even so, buyers gladly exchange their shriveling dollars for the Treasury gold scraps. For a while, the German inflation gave the appearance of stimulating business, but this was because no one wanted to hold on to marks that were losing their value. Instead, the money was spent, traded for goods of all kinds which would not lose their value. But this was a self-defeating process. As people became more anxious to get rid of marks, they became less eager to accept them. As a result, prices climbed ever more steeply. Organized workers and unions managed to win pay raises, but not fast enough to keep up. Unorganized workers and those on fixed incomes were left behind altogether. Wages in marks rose, but real wages began to drop. This is the very thing which is now happening here in the United States. Germans who earned a living by legitimate work of all kinds began to slip downward in their standard of living. The point was reached where speculation in gold and commodities was the only way to keep up with inflation. There are obvious parallels today. In recent years, investors have increasingly shifted their attentions to the commodity exchanges while the stock market wanders in the doldrums. As for gold, who doesn't know about gold these days? The German inflation reached the point where it fed on itself. It was no longer a question of basic economics. It was a question of confidence. People lost all confidence in the mark, and from that point on the presses literally could not print marks fast enough. By the middle of 1923, men were paid as often as three times a day. Their wives would meet them and hurry off to spend the money before it could depreciate still further. The point was reached where doing business in this way became impossible. Men would not work for money that was worthless before they could spend it. Farmers would not trade food for paper that would buy nothing. Businesses started closing. Food riots erupted. The German economy started falling apart at the seams. The German superinflation was eventually stopped in the same way that it is always used when a currency collapses. A new currency is introduced to replace the old one. In Germany, it was called the Rentenmark, and it was backed up by pledges that restored confidence. Here in the United States, our replacement currency has already been printed for initial distribution when the time comes. We will trade many old dollars for each new dollar, but even the new dollar will not be backed by gold because we have almost no gold for that purpose. Instead, it will be a garrison dollar, usable only within the United States, unacceptable in other countries. In audiobook 15 years ago, I explained that those who were putting these forces in motion were declaring war on us, the American people. The four Rockefeller brothers were hoping to end up as our absolute dictators on the way to conquering the whole world. Now, The Bolsheviks here in America are trying to take advantage of the economic forces which they helped the Rockefellers set in motion. The Rockefellers were aiming for a complete corporate socialism takeover, whereas the Bolsheviks want a new Bolshevik revolution and a brutal state socialism takeover. The Russians, meanwhile, are using their robotoids in key positions in an effort to thwart the Bolshevik design here in America. The Russians did not create the forces leading to our economic collapse, but neither are they trying to stop them. Instead, they are attempting to guide the process of economic collapse here in such a way that it will backfire on the Bolsheviks. 7 years ago, 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, we the American people might have acted to undo the forces leading to collapse. We could have demanded that our gold be brought back to Fort Knox, that those who took it be punished, and that the dollar be good as gold once again. But we, as a people, did nothing at all. It was far easier to accept official lies than the unofficial truth. So now our land has become an economic battleground in a war between the Russian Christians and their ancient enemies. It remains to be seen who will win that war, but either way, millions of Americans are going to lose and to suffer.